Penguin Random House Audio presents Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup by John Carreyrou. Read for you by Will Dameron. For Molly, Sebastian, Jack, and Francesca. Author's Note. This book is based on hundreds of interviews with more than 150 people, including more than 60 former Theranos employees. Most of the men and women who appear as characters in the narrative do so under their real names, but some ask that I shield their identities, either because they feared retribution from the company, worried that they might be swept up in the Justice Department's ongoing criminal investigation, or wanted to guard their privacy. In the interest of getting the most complete and detailed rendering of the facts, I agreed to give these people pseudonyms. However, everything else I describe about them and their experiences is factual and true. Any quotes I have used from emails or documents are verbatim and based upon the documents themselves. When I have attributed quotes to characters in dialogues, those quotes are reconstructed from participants' memories. Some chapters rely on records from legal proceedings, such as deposition testimony. In the process of writing this book, I reached out to all of the key figures in the Theranos saga and offered them the opportunity to comment on any allegations concerning them. Elizabeth Holmes, as is her right, declined my interview requests and chose not to cooperate with this account. Prologue. November 17, 2006. Tim Kemp had good news for his team. The former IBM executive was in charge of bioinformatics at Theranos, a startup with a cutting-edge blood testing system. The company had just completed its first big live demonstration for a pharmaceutical company. Elizabeth Holmes, Theranos' 22-year-old founder, had flown to Switzerland and shown off the system's capabilities to executives at Novartis, the European drug giant. "Elizabeth called me this morning," Kemp wrote in an email to his 15-person team. "She expressed her thanks and said that it was perfect. She specifically asked me to thank you and let you all know her appreciation. She additionally mentioned that Novartis was so impressed that they have asked for a proposal and have expressed interest in a financial arrangement for a project. We did what we came to do." This was a pivotal moment for Theranos. The three-year-old startup had progressed from an ambitious idea Holmes had dreamed up in her Stanford dorm room to an actual product a huge multinational corporation was interested in using. Word of the demo's success made its way upstairs to the second floor, where senior executives' offices were located. One of those executives was Henry Moseley, Theranos' chief financial officer. Moseley had joined Theranos 8 months earlier, in March 2006. A rumpled dresser with piercing green eyes and a laid-back personality, he was a veteran of Silicon Valley's technology scene. After growing up in the Washington, D.C. area and getting his MBA at the University of Utah, he'd come out to California in the late 1970s and never left. His first job was at chipmaker Intel, one of the Valley's pioneers. He'd later gone on to run the finance departments of 4 different tech companies, taking 2 of them public. Theranos was far from his first rodeo. What had drawn Moseley to Theranos was the talent and experience gathered around Elizabeth. She might be young, but she was surrounded by an all-star cast. The chairman of her board was Donald L. Lucas, the venture capitalist who had groomed billionaire software entrepreneur Larry Ellison and helped him take Oracle Corporation public in the mid-1980s. Lucas and Ellison had both put some of their own money into Theranos. Another board member with a sterling reputation was Channing Robertson, the associate dean of Stanford's School of Engineering. Robertson was one of the stars of the Stanford faculty. His expert testimony about the addictive properties of cigarettes had forced the tobacco industry to enter into a landmark $6.5 billion settlement with the state of Minnesota in the late 1990s. Based on the few interactions Mosley had had with him, it was clear Robertson thought the world of Elizabeth. Theranos also had a strong management team. Kemp had spent 30 years at IBM. Diane Parks, Theranos' chief commercial officer, had 25 years of experience at pharmaceutical and biotechnology companies. John Howard, the senior vice president for products, had overseen Panasonic's chip-making subsidiary. It wasn't often that you found executives of that caliber at a small startup. It wasn't just the board and the executive team that had sold Mosley on Theranos, though. The market it was going after was huge. Pharmaceutical companies spent tens of billions of dollars on clinical trials to test new drugs each year. If Theranos could make itself indispensable to them and capture a fraction of that spending, it could make a killing. Elizabeth had asked him to put together some financial projections she could show investors. The first set of numbers he'd come up with hadn't been to her liking, so he'd revised them upward. He was a little uncomfortable with the revised numbers, but he figured they were in the realm of the plausible if the company executed perfectly. Besides, the venture capitalists startups courted for funding knew that startup founders overstated these forecasts. It was part of the game. VCs even had a term for it, the hockey stick forecast. It showed revenue stagnating for a few years and then magically shooting up in a straight line. The one thing Mosley wasn't sure he completely understood was how the Theranos technology worked. When prospective investors came by, he took them to see Shanok Roy, Theranos' co-founder. Shanok had a PhD in chemical engineering. He and Elizabeth had worked together in Robertson's research lab at Stanford. Shanok would prick his finger and milk a few drops of blood from it. Then he would transfer the blood to a white plastic cartridge the size of a credit card. The cartridge would slot into a rectangular box the size of a toaster. The box was called a reader. It extracted a data signal from the cartridge and beamed it wirelessly to a server that analyzed the data and beamed back a result. That was the gist of it. When Shanok demonstrated the system to investors, he pointed them to a computer screen that showed the blood flowing through the cartridge inside the reader. Mosley didn't really grasp the physics or chemistries at play, but that wasn't his role. He was the finance guy. As long as the system showed a result, he was happy. And it always did. Elizabeth was back from Switzerland a few days later. She sauntered around with a smile on her face, more evidence that the trip had gone well, Mosley figured. Not that that was unusual. Elizabeth was often upbeat. She had an entrepreneur's boundless optimism. She liked to use the term extraordinary, with extra written in italics and a hyphen for emphasis, to describe the Theranos mission in her emails to staff. It was a bit over the top, but she seemed sincere, and Mosley knew that evangelizing was what successful startup founders did in Silicon Valley. You didn't change the world by being cynical. What was odd, though, was that the handful of colleagues who'd accompanied Elizabeth on the trip didn't seem to share her enthusiasm. Some of them looked outright downcast. Did someone's puppy get run over? Mosley wondered, half-jokingly. He wandered downstairs, where most of the company's 60 employees sat in clusters of cubicles, and looked for Shanok. Surely Shanok would know if there was any problem he hadn't been told about. At first, Shanok professed not to know anything. But Mosley sensed he was holding back and kept pressing him. Shanok gradually let down his guard and allowed that the Theranos 1.0, as Elizabeth had christened the blood testing system, didn't always work. It was kind of a crapshoot, actually, he said. Sometimes you could coax a result from it, and sometimes you couldn't. This was news to Mosley. He thought the system was reliable. Didn't it always seem to work when investors came to view it? Well, there was a reason it always seemed to work, Shinnok said.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?